Hello and welcome to Pardes from Jerusalem, the podcast series from the Pardes Institute of Jewish Studies in Jerusalem. I'm Larry Kluger, a Pardes alum. This week, Bamidbar. This week, Rabbi Alex Israel discusses Bamidbar. Rabbi Alex Israel is a member of the Pardes faculty. And now, Rabbi Alex Israel.
Thank you, Larry. This week we read Parshat Bamidbar, and we enter into the world of the wilderness as the Israel camp undergo a census, a reorganization, and all the 12 tribes are aligned around the focal point of the Mishkan, the tabernacle, and we read how each of the tribes are counted and placed into their specific location in a very, very organized camp of Israel. One of the questions which arises as we open the pages of our parasha this week is, what is the purpose of counting the Jewish people? After all, the Jewish people were counted when they came out of Egypt, and we hear about them enumerating being 600,000 strong. Likewise, when the Mishkan, the tabernacle, was set up, everybody donated a half shekel tax, and when they counted it up, it came to 603,550 men above the age of 20 years old. So we already know the number of the people. What exactly is going on here? Here we might be able to point to two different explanations. The first is voiced by the Rashbam on this week's parasha, where he talks about the idea that, maybe I'll mention the verses, Miben Esrim Shana V'Mala, from 20 years of age of up, Kol Yotzei Tzava B'Yisrael, Tifgudu Otam, Litzivotam, Atav Yaharon. From 20 years of up, whoever goes to the army in Israel, you should count them according to their armies, you and Aharon. In other words, what this is a military count. The people of Israel are about to embark on their journey to the Promised Land, and there they're going to need to engage in war and capture the land of Canaan, make it their homeland. This is what they're meant to do. In fact, the opening date of this parasha is in the second year in the wilderness, on the first of the second month. Only 20 days later, they're going to leave Mount Sinai and start walking towards the Promised Land. So now is the time to organize the military forces. Now is the time to organize the army. And therefore, they are counting the people. And in fact, here, many of the different word choices of the parasha will come into focus. So, for example, if you look at chapter 2, constantly the phrases, Degel Machane Yehuda, Degel Machane Reuven, the standard for the camp of Yehuda, the standard for the camp of Reuven, where we have organized machanot. Frequently, machane means a war camp, and each one has a flag with a particular color and a particular emblem on it, much like armies do. And this is what we have. So this is the first explanation of what we're doing in the parasha, counting the Jewish people. But there is a totally very, very different explanation to what's going on here. And once again, I refer to chapter 2. Where the people are organized around a very specific hub, a specific center. Ishal diglo ba'otot levei rabotam yachanu b'nei Yisrael mineged saviv lo'ohel mo'ed yachanu. The people are going to camp, mineged, aligned with, and saviv, all around the tent of meeting. That's where they will camp. And in fact, not only do they encamp around the tent of meeting, but more than that, when they travel, the camp of the Levites, the tent of meeting itself is carried or is transported in the middle of the camp. Just like they encamp, so they travel. And in fact, chapter 3 and chapter 4 of the book of Bamidbar deal with the appointment of the Levim, the appointment of the Levites, and their special sacred work where they are taken out of the rank and file of the children of Israel and given a very, very special mission to serve God. So that we read here, when we open chapter 3, about the fact that the Levim are actually given over to God. It says here, God says, "Va'ani hinei lakachti et ha'Levim mitoch b'nei Yisrael. I have taken the Levites out of B'nai Yisrael." And earlier on in the same paragraph, so to speak, it talks about the idea that they are Lifnei Ohel Moed La'avodet Avodat HaMishkan. They are the servants for this very special sanctuary. I can't imagine two more diametrically opposed motifs. Because, of course, one is simply war, military, macho, brutal. Admittedly, it's to further the Jewish story. It is there in order to bring us to our destiny in the land of Israel. But this is war. On the other hand, the other function of this camp is that at its center, at its epicenter, it has the sanctuary of God. Sanctity. We've just finished the book of Vayikra, which tells us just how pure we have to be in order to enter that sacred precinct. So this is a whole different dimension which centers around sanctity and the Jewish people fulfilling their legacy as a Mamlechet Kohanim v'Goy Kadosh, a kingdom of priests and a holy nation. How exactly do these two motifs go together? One of war and one of sanctity. What does all this mean? When I was considering this question this week, suddenly I was reminded of a very, very famous essay by Rabbi Joseph Dov Soloveitchik, otherwise known as the Rav, the famous rabbi who was the Rosh Yeshiva of Yeshiva University, died in 1993, was considered possibly the leading light of the modern Orthodox world in the 20th century, if one could talk of such a figure. And he wrote a work called Kol Dodi Dofek, The Voice of My Beloved Knocks, where he focused upon two themes, the theme of fate and destiny. And let me try and explain what he means by that. He said that Jewish existence and so many things to do with the Jewish story, the Jewish people can function in a mode of fate or destiny. What is fate? Fate is a situation in which I am passive, I am acted upon, I don't really have much choice in what I do. Things happen to me, but I am really an object. Destiny is the opposite of that. Destiny relates to me as a subject, or to the Jewish people as a subject. It is something that I choose of my own free will. It is something that I can control. It is something higher because it relates to my destiny, not something which happens to me, but something that I can create, something that I want to create, something which fulfills my role, fills my ambitions, fills my dreams. And Rabbi Soloveitchik describes Jewish history along this duality, fate and destiny. We are going to follow through some of his ideas and show how this fate and destiny plays itself out. But let me just try and explain how this relates to what we've spoken about, because Rav Soloveitchik talks about two different ways in which the Jewish people might be described. Number one, machaneh. Number two, eda. He uses these two words, camp and congregation. And how does this work? He says that the Jewish people can sometimes be called a camp and occasionally a congregation. The Torah uses both terms in speaking of the Israelites, but he says the following. The camp is created as a result of the desire for self-defense and is nurtured by a sense of fear. The congregation is created as a result of belonging, for the realization of the exalted ethical idea is nurtured by the sentiment of love. So camp is when we're passive, self-defense, fear. Congregation is the longing of a realization of an ethical idea, the sentiment of love. Fate reigns in unbounded fashion in the camp. Destiny reigns in the congregation. So, the camp, like, is a situation whereby we might have to go to war. We don't choose to do it. We do it because we have to defend ourselves. We're worried about extinction. We're worried about what will happen if we don't have to defend ourselves. But congregation is something very different. Congregation, Eida. Eida is the fundamental phrase which is used in the establishment of a prayer quorum, a minyan. And this is where we find ourselves building something which really expresses Eida, the word for witnesses, the congregation of witnesses, because they bear witness to what a holy nation should become. Rabbi Soloveitchik doesn't only talk about these two dimensions, machane and Eida, camp and congregation, but now what he's going to do is map out Jewish history in this way. So he does the following. Under fate, we said already, camp, destiny, congregation. But listen to this. He's going to say that fate and destiny also map out Jewish history in the following way. We have two covenants, he says. There is a covenant which was forged in Egypt, and there is a covenant at Sinai. The covenant of Egypt is a covenant, is a connection of the Jewish people which was created in suffering. It's a covenant of fate. We suffered together, and that's why we are a people together. However, we have a higher covenant that we were chose to do. At Mount Sinai, God came to the people and said, would you like to keep the Torah? And we said, Na'aseh v'nishma, we will do it. We will listen, we will do. That is the covenant of destiny. There, we are not shaped by what people did to us, that people enslaved us, and that we were persecuted. But rather, we are shaped by our future, our code of Jewish law, the type of life that we want to make as a Jewish people. The covenant of Egypt is the covenant of fate. The covenant of Sinai is the covenant of destiny. And he says that the Jewish people always have these two elements. What is the covenant of fate? What is the covenant of Egypt? It's the idea that Jews are always together. Jews always take care of each other. Because if we're going to suffer together, shared suffering also means shared responsibility and liability. As he, and I will quote a section, the preacher of the last generation put it well. He said, the Jewish people may be compared to a man with two heads, concerning which the question was posed in the house of study. If it's got two heads, how does that work with inheritance? Does he take two portions or one portion? One may similarly ask, has the dispersion of the Jewish people throughout lands of exile meant that we are many peoples or one people? The answer, he said, is let boiling water be poured on one of the heads. If both heads scream out in pain, then they are one organism. The Jewish people, though we have many different congregations, we have many different denominations, is one people. How did we learn that? Through the boiling water. We learned that when we're in trouble, we all look out for each other. That's the covenant of fate. And therefore, out of the covenant of fate, we have the obligation of responsibility, of chesed, of looking out for each other, of charity, of seeing every single member of the Jewish community as our brother, as our sister. And that's what we have. But the covenant of destiny is a higher ideal. And in this regard, we have to choose what we want to be doing. It is where we, just like Sinai, just like the Torah, we decide what code of life we want to live. How we're going to create sanctity, halacha, how we're going to rise to a higher level. This is beautifully played out through the process of conversion, because if Judaism contains this covenant of fate and this covenant of destiny, then a person who is joining the Jewish faith also goes through a ritual which relates to fate and to destiny. What are these two? Well, the first is through, for a Jewish man, circumcision. Again, circumcision is a covenant of faith because it is performed to me, and it marks my body. And now suddenly I look different. My body is actually marked. And one might even argue that it comes through suffering, just like the covenant of fate, just like the covenant of Egypt, just like the camp community is brought together by a fear of annihilation or extinction by an attack. And on the one hand, conversion is a person joining himself to the Jewish people formed by the covenant of Egypt. And therefore, one of the ideas here is that a convert is asked whether he's willing to be part of the Jewish people who have frequently been persecuted and suffered in the course of history. But of course, that's the first stage of conversion, because after that, the convert goes to the mikveh and is immersed and is reborn again in a state of purity, adopts a role which is meant to express a higher calling. And this is the covenant of destiny, the covenant of Sinai. This is the second way of conversion, which is tevilah, immersion. I think what I've done here is I've tried to align these themes, or Rabbi Soloveitchik does, and let's put it this way, fate and destiny, machaneh, the camp, the war camp, and the edah, the congregation, in our case of the midbar, the camp for war, and on the other hand, centered around the Mishkan, centered around God, centered around what our religion is leading towards. The covenant of Egypt, shared suffering. The covenant of Sinai, a destiny of law, of vision, of sanctity, of creating a different society. In the realm of conversion, circumcision, and tevilah, immersion. Where is this all leading to? So I would say several different things. What we might be able to understand, and what Rabbi Soloveitchik brings from this, is the fact that on a certain level, no Jewish community can give up on another community. We should never be in a situation where we look ourselves at a world and we say, you know, the community in Israel is different from the community in the diaspora, that one community looks down on the other, because we have to know that at the fundamental essence of who we are, we have a covenant of fate. We are one machane. If we can be one people when we're under persecution, and stand together in moments of despair, then we should understand that we are always one. But on the other hand, if we just exist in that mode, that we are a machaneh, that we're under attack, and that's what our identity is, for example, in a contemporary reality, if we're just based, for example, on a Holocaust mindset of never again, never again is never going to be a compelling reason to live a vibrant and active Jewish life. Just because others wanted to annihilate us doesn't give me a reason to live as a Jew. For that, I have to have a covenant of destiny. For that, I have to have a Torah. For that, I have to have a vision of what a Jewish life is going to be. And what's amazing about this explanation is because it gives us this sort of dialectical, or this sort of these two legs on which Judaism stands. We're not just a community of faith. And when we sometimes feel our faith leads us in different directions, because sometimes we find, even in our religious denominations, we see our Judaism different, let's always remember that we are one people, because we're all one machaneh. That's what we were taught by our joint suffering in Egypt. And therefore, we should also see our connectedness, even when we see our spiritual legacies as being diverse. You know, I find this amazing at this time of year, because, of course, we're counting the Omer at this time of year. And in terms of the Jewish calendar, we started counting on Pesach. We started counting on Passover when we left Egypt. That's our covenant of togetherness because of fate. But we're marching towards, we count 49 days till we reach Shavuot, to Matan Torah, to the time in which we have our covenant of destiny. And we're sort of on those 49 steps which connect the two. I think it's very important for ourselves, because Judaism is about finding that destiny, but it's rooted in that common connectedness. And therefore, as we're traveling through this Omer period, I think we can see those two poles holding us in to a certain framework. And I'd say, I'm thinking about this tonight as I just watched the opening of an amazing Sound and Light show by the Walls of Jerusalem to celebrate the 50th anniversary of the reunification of Jerusalem. And I think to myself that for many people, Yom HaAtzma'ut, Israel Independence Day, was about the covenant of fate, was about having a place for Jews to be able to go to, was about establishing just a place for the Jews, a place under the sun, a place in which Jews, if they were in trouble, could go to. But for many people, Yom Yerushalayim, Jerusalem Day, the day when we returned to the Western Wall and Jerusalem was unified, represented for many people a realization of a Jewish dream, a return to Jerusalem, a Jerusalem which Jews had hoped for centuries and millennia. Represented for many people not just to the idea of a collective, but the idea of really representing Judaism, representing a return to the place, the holy places, which were all written in the Bible, in the Tanakh. And people turn to a sense of what this means for Jewish peoplehood, what this means in terms of fulfilling our dreams. I'm not claiming it's been simple. None of this is simple. But we're in this journey. So as I said, right from the beginning, Parashat Bamidbar gives us this count of the people. And in counting the people, we really raise two dimensions of existence. On the one hand, we have a sort of prosaic, mundane national existence. The idea that we have a land to conquer. We have needs, physical needs. We have ways in which we need to set up our nation, a land, an army, national administration, government, and what have you. But then we have a higher calling. And as the calling to rally around the sanctuary, to have God in our midst, to fulfill our legacy of an Or LaGoyim, a light to the nations, that we should become a nation who is really being able to spread values which can enlighten the world. That's a covenant of destiny. That's what we look forward to on Shavuot. And it's only by holding on to these two pillars, which are expressed through the count of the Jewish people in Parashat Bamidbar. It's only through these two pillars, which are expressed by the two poles of the Exodus from Egypt and the revelation at Sinai, Pesach and Shavuot, that we are really a whole nation. And my prayer at this time of the year, as we are celebrating Jerusalem Day this week, is indeed that we learn these two lessons. We have our renewed nationhood in our generation, which is just a phenomenal thing. The fact that we're able to be a nation, we're able to be independent, and we're able to carve out our own history. This is just a remarkable quantum leap for the Jewish people after 1,900 years in which we haven't had that opportunity. But it's also a huge challenge. And the challenge is to find the covenant of destiny. The covenant, the aim is to find our Jerusalem, a Jerusalem of peace, a Jerusalem of togetherness. The idea that Jerusalem was conceived by the prophets as a place where Ki Mitzion Tetzei Torah Udvar Hashem Yerushalayim, where a certain ethical message, Isaiah talks in chapter 2, about Jerusalem representing world peace, about Jerusalem representing justice in the world. And this is still a message, even though we've reconstituted ourselves as a nation, it's still a goal, and it's still a legacy which eludes us, which is still a work in progress. So let's hope that this covenant of fate and this covenant of destiny can become inspirational for us and can become a road map so that we can move forward and know where we want to go as a Jewish people. Or maybe each different group in the Jewish people can try and take steps in order to further the Jewish nation so that we can fulfill our God-given destiny. I wish you all Shabbat Shalom, and may we celebrate in Jerusalem always, dancing the streets, fulfilling the words of the prophet, and see Jerusalem moves onwards and upwards towards that wonderful legacy. Thank you. Shabbat Shalom.
Thank you, Rabbi Israel. Thanks for tuning in, and we'll see you on the next episode of Pardes from Jerusalem.